Welcome to my monthly podcast series titled Becoming a Sage. My name is Jan Fried, but you can call me Dr. Jan. I blog about leading, living, and saging, or positive aging. I'm passionate about helping people get from where they are to where they want to be, particularly in the second half of life. I also say that I'm out to retire the word retirement. We are not retiring, but moving on to something else. And I believe it takes time and intentional thought to successfully move on to what's next in life. I've selected to interview George Schofield. Dr. Schofield is the author of After 50, It's Up to Us, Developing the Skills and Agility We'll Need, eloquently explains why and how we all must face head on the new realities that await us. Dr. Schofield's new book is How Do I Get There From Here? Planning for Retirement When the Old Rules No Longer Apply. This book is due out in August of this year, 2017. This book takes a pragmatic and accessible look at new and smarter approaches to retirement and life preparation planning in these turbulent times of increasingly discontinuous change. And that's for sure. For more information about Dr. Schofield, please see his bio attached to this podcast. But for this podcast, I'm going to call him George. So welcome to the series, George.
Thank you.
Well, today we're going to be talking about planning for the next phase of life when the old rules no longer apply. And so there's no one better than to talk to you. And as we were talking, you told me your new tagline is navigating the new normal with a handcrafted life in the modern world. Well, what was the old normal? Why don't you explain kind of this tagline?
Sure. Well, let's understand, especially if we're talking about retirement and later life, mm-hmm. The retirement used to be a whole segment of life. You were a child, you went to school, you got married and you worked, if you're an average person, and then you retired. So the old normal looked like a four-stage life process. That's simply no longer true.
Mm-hmm.
The new normal looks like you're going to have a childhood, you're going to get an education, but that's probably going to have to go on for the rest of your life. Your degree may or may not predict what you do for the rest of your life. You may have marriage and children in there. You're going to work a whole lot longer, and on top of it, you're going to live a lot longer. So if you would have assumed you were going to die at 80 before and done financial planning until then, and you live to be 97, where's the other 17 years worth of money going to come from? It certainly in the long run won't come from savings to 80 or even pensions that are going to be threatened over time.
Mm-hmm. Very, very true. Well, why is it critical for us to understand this change? And I mean, honestly, I can't wait for your new book to come out. But tell us more about, you know, why this is just so important to understand and what's involved and, you know, what people should do to really understand and then start preparing.
Right. Well, let's begin with the notion that it's common in our news and in our commentary today to understand that change is accelerating. If that's all there were to it, we could probably grasp it faster just by practicing. But that's not all there is to it. Not only is change accelerating, but it's no longer continuous. In other words, when you're in your kitchen, your stove will be improved over time so that it's got built-in things. You can see that coming. You can learn to operate it. At work, you may have had a series of different computers or different softwares, but it came along in kind of a continuous improvement way. What's happening to us now in discontinuous change is that we can't see it coming, and it's going so fast that we can't actually understand it at the time. For instance, overnight elimination of jobs through technology. For instance, be expecting to be married for your entire lifetime, and where's the explosion of divorces? Over 65. These are examples of discontinuous change for which we're not prepared.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That's for sure. And, you know, I was kind of curious in your tagline. You know, we talked about the new normal, which you just defined, with a handcrafted life. What do you mean by a handcrafted life?
In the past, Jan, we could look at our friends and even sometimes our parents, and we could predict what we would like our life to go, how we would like our lives to go. By handcrafted, I mean, regardless of the discontinuous change that happens in our lives, it's almost impossible to use our past or somebody else's to predict our future. And we certainly can't do long-term planning anymore. Therefore, if we're in an 18, say, to 36-month planning period, and we're having to invent it as we go with new information and our own changes in our own lives, then that means we're going to handcraft our lives, and we simply can't say, oh, I've got a long-term plan. I can put it in the drawer. I know where I'm going. Yeah. That won't work.
Yeah. Well, that's very true. So given that, George, what would be the next steps? What does it look like? I mean, what would you really tell someone? And one of the things that I'm kind of concerned about is in many of these interviews about, you know, becoming a sage, it often sounds like people need to have a lot of money. You know, it's kind of for the affluent. And I know that, you know, when I talk about this, you know, you have to have enough. I'm not naive. You need to have enough to, you know, secure your whatever your lifestyle is, and particularly healthcare, because we are living longer. But if people have the financial piece kind of settled, you know, what are some steps that anyone can take regardless of kind of their financial situation? I mean, assuming they have their needs met, you know, what are some steps people can take? Meaning you don't have to be rich to do this.
So let me go back to the premise that we have ourselves financially set, if you will.
Yeah.
I think for a ton of people, that's not going to be true. I said before, if you saved to 80 and you live to be 95, where's the other 15 years worth of money going to come from?
True.
But if we look at statistically, the majority of Americans, they are no longer going to be able to save their way out of the hole, H-O-L-E. They don't have enough recuperative years left to do that. So the thing I want to address is certainly there are people who have plenty of money, but I think that the majority of people will not, based on the statistics I'm seeing, and they won't be able to save their way out of the hole. Therefore, they're going to have to work full-time, part-time, in some way they're going to have to extend income streams.
Okay, that's very true. So tell us about, you know, what if you were going to kind of map this out, what are the steps that people really should take so that we are prepared?
So let's separate the money.
Okay.
Aside for the moment. Uh-huh. I completely agree with you. Money is an issue. People may have it. They may not. But what we know about money is that it'll feed you and it'll keep you in housing and a variety of things, but it doesn't necessarily guarantee a high quality life. What uh-huh. guarantees a high quality life is frequently connections and experiences. And the third thing would be skill. So if we look at what I talk about in the new book, How Do I Get There From Here? I'm proposing a whole new way to plan. The first thing to know about it is that you begin with where you are, not with where you think you want to be in the future. So frequently when people are doing life planning, it's great fun to imagine where you'd like to be 20 years from now in a little house in Florida or traveling the world or whatever all those things are. I actually discourage people from starting with where would I like to be in 20 years, because I think that people can get carried away with that, and I really want them to know where they are right now. So the first step is to do an inventory of where you are financially, in terms of your skills, in terms of your social connections, in terms of your networks, in terms of your family, in terms of your health, in terms of your finances. That's absolutely the first place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Step two is to craft a plan, but I think it has to be an incremental plan. I sincerely believe, and I'm certainly seeing it in all the people that I work with, we can no longer do a 20-year plan for our lives. A lot of us can't even do a 10-year plan for our lives. So I'm asking people to do phased planning. The first phase would be, what can I plan for the next 18 months? That's pretty concrete.
Yeah.
And you certainly have some intentions about where you'd like to go. But the first thing to do is figure out where you are. The second thing to do is create an 18-month plan. The third thing to do is create a plan, second phase of the plan, that would probably take you from 18 to 48 months. You can look at it in terms of your health, in terms of your education, your employment, your children, your family, your connections, all of these different things that came out of the inventory. That's part of where you're supposed to be planning. So you've got an 18-month plan, you have a 48-month plan, and then I encourage people to think about where they'd like to go. But I'd like to think them of have them think of that where they'd like to go long term as intentions. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as they're locked into a set of expectations and they lose their ability to be adaptable, they're immediately in trouble.
Can you kind of give an example where someone's done that, or, you know, talk a little more about the difference between expectations and intentions?
Okay. So let's go back to taking inventory.
Right.
I'm working with a couple at the moment. He wants to retire. She does not. They don't have enough money to retire. And when we did their inventory, we discovered that they were both in jobs that are going to have a limited shelf life. They're going to be replaced by technology sooner rather than later.
Okay.
So that was a wake-up call. The 18-month plan then included what they would need to do about their skills, what they would need to be to do about growing the social networks that they're engaged in, the professional ones and the personal ones. We went to beyond that, including a financial plan.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a financial planner, but I always encourage people to work with a financial planner in addition, and we're quite capable of teaming for our clients. The next phase then would be, if I've got my money on a track and if I've got my skills on a track and I can see that I'm going to need to work, where do I want to spend my money in the 18 to 48 month period? How do I want to spend my time? Who do I want to be with?
Mm-hmm.
So working with these couples, we were able to identify the real short-term pitfalls in the new normal for them, as well as the possibilities. In the 18-month period, we built a plan that would lead into the 18 to 48 month plan. And then beyond that, the difference is that they could see that even though they've had these dreams, and I certainly don't want to talk them out of their long-term dreams, the fact is what they're dreaming may not be there by the time they get there. They imagined buying into an after 50 community and are suddenly discovering that may not be a good fit for them. So I'm trying to hold people to having clear intentions and adaptable intentions rather than making them locked in like granite set of expectations around which they cannot adapt.
Uh-huh. That's excellent. Let's talk a little more about your book. It's coming out in August. I've already ordered it. I've pre-ordered it. So I like the title, How Do I Get There From Here? What did you learn in that process, or what would be the main, you know, takeaways from that book that might entice someone else to buy it, or that you could share with us?
So my audience starts at about 45,
uh-huh.
40 to 45, and goes to about 80.
Uh-huh.
Because if you're 80, maybe you could build a business, maybe you could restart your financial life, maybe you could do a whole variety of things. But this is information that you didn't have a chance to have. So I'm trying to catch people early and offer them information that this simply isn't out there at the moment. The first trip up point is that we don't have the vocabulary we need.
I totally agree. We need to change. I think if we change our language, it'll help change our thinking.
Absolutely. So let's start with the word job.
Mm-hmm.
According to freelancer.com, 3 million Americans are freelancing and generating, I think I have that number right, $50 million worth of revenue. Work is no longer necessarily going to be configured as a job.
Right.
So in your own planning, I'm not suggesting that a job might not be what you want or what you end up with, but I am suggesting that if you limit yourself to job and job thinking, you're going to limit yourself from major other opportunities for income streams and a great professional life.
Uh-huh.
Let's move on to retirement. Retirement as a word and you've said it, is pretty much defunct, and yet we're continuing to use it in, with an almost religious flair in a lot of ways.
Right.
It's no longer a period of life. It's no longer guaranteed. We're no longer going to have pensions that will allow us to do that. And it's not necessarily a good fit for us anyway, because if we're going to live a lot longer at 50, where we might have died at 75 before, we might die at 100 now. That means if you're 50, you could have 50 more years to live and be engaged and need to be able to afford it.
Yeah. Have you come up with a better word for retirement? Because I was at a conference and we were brainstorming about what word do you, what is a better phrase? Or, I mean, you know, there's always second half, third chapter,
right,
you know, but have you come up with a better word?
I have not. And the reason that I don't, I'll just say aside, I don't like the third chapter or the second chapter or any of that is because we don't live in a straight line.
Yeah.
One of my friends is starting a second family in his 50s.
Uh-huh.
Where is he? It's not his second chapter. It's sort of his first chapter and a half. I think we're trying to put ourselves into categories that make it readily understandable when in fact we're not actually doing the critical thinking we need to do.
Yeah, that's a good point, Jerry. That's a good point. Okay, so what else about your book? What'd you learn in your book? Yeah. I mean, you were talking about language,
so
words.
I did a ton of interviews, and one of the things I discovered is people have an awareness that things may not go according to the way they understood it when they were growing up. But there's a fair amount of resistance to figuring out how else it might go because, quite frankly, it's a lot of work to rethink where your life is going, and yet it's the essential ingredient.
Yeah, that's true.
Another really important piece, excuse me, is that we have thought of ourselves from the book and have thought of ourselves as having a really fixed, dependable launch point right now. Where am I in my life? Well, my kids are graduated from college. I have long-term employment. My marriage is solid, whatever. And where am I trying to go in 30 years? Well, I want to retire, and I would like to be able to do X, Y, Z. Say, the traditional view is I want a house in a warm climate, and I want to play golf. I think that's probably not so true anymore, but let's take those two points.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're standing when your kids are graduated from college and when you have this long-term employment, may or may not be stable. We're going to see more and more companies rolled into other companies, and over time, positions eliminated, and people are going to have to look at non-job options.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the other end, and where you want to be in retirement. That may not look so good by the time you get there. And on top of it, our vocabulary, road, sign, turn, all of our map language we use for how to get here from there is not going to work, as the couple I was describing discovered, because there isn't a straight line from here to there, and there may be a whole lot of curves and a whole lot of switchbacks that they didn't see coming. So they really have to keep their wits about them.
Mm-hmm. No, that's excellent. Excellent. What else should I have asked you that my listeners need to know? You know, you've got a lot strong background in this. You just finished writing this book that's going to come out. I know you've interviewed a lot of people. I mean, what else should I, you know, given the fact that our listeners are, you know, are kind of tied in because this is called Becoming a Sage, what else should I have asked?
Well, so let me just play with the word sage. And
yeah.
I thank you very much. I'm honored to be a sage in your eyes. I think that the very first thing around sageism, if there's such a word, that I would encourage people to pay attention to is they need to at least have some amount of sageism in their own lives. We need people who know what they're doing. We need professional advisors, whether it's health or aging or financials or whatever, all the education, employability, we really need experts to help us with all that. But everyone's going to have to become their own version of a sage in their own lives, because there isn't a template to say, I'm going to retire, the church will take care of me. I'm going to retire, the my pension will make sure I'm okay. One of my clients, who's been retired about 15 years and her company was just purchased, received a letter saying, "We will no longer support health insurance for retirees."
Mm-hmm.
And they gave her 4 weeks to find new insurance.
Oh, wow. And that's happening more and more for sure.
So there's a very discontinuous change.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been working with her so that she had some sageism in her own right, if you will,
mm-hmm.
because she didn't panic. She simply said, "Oops, discontinuous change. How am I going to work with this? Where's the expert I need? What's the real impact on me?" The big thing that we're going to have to give up, and I think it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people, is we're not going to be able to problem solve our way out of a lot of situations that we have historically problem solved. And that's a shocking thing for a lot of people.
Such as, can you give me an example?
Sure. So if I see that my... if I see that my marriage has an ache in it, I can see it coming. My wife and I can see it coming, and we can go and get some help to solve the problem that we have identified. That is problem solving. On the other hand, if I'm working in a company and I think I'm going to be there for a long time, and suddenly my company is sold and I don't have a job anymore, or I've lost my health insurance, is the example I just gave.
Uh-huh.
You can't necessarily solve your way through discontinuous change because you can't see it coming. At first, you don't really know what it is. And if you start wasting time, resources, energy on solving something that isn't the real issue, then that's a loss for you. And what I really want people to understand in working with discontinuous change is that they're going to have to stop dead in their tracks and say, "Ooh, maybe I've never seen this before. Maybe I have to figure out what it is. Maybe I have to figure out how to work with it. Maybe I need a professional. Maybe I don't." But it's not going to allow me to snap my fingers and do problem solving and feel terrific because I've moved beyond it forever. That's less likely to happen in the new normal.
Uh-huh. I get that. And you're right, it is happening more and more, and that's where life experience doesn't even really prepare you, you know, because life as we, you know, have known it isn't the same.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So what I really want for my readers and for my clients is for them to say to themselves, "Oops, this might not be familiar enough that the old tools will work for me. I think I need to stop and pay attention to what it is and figure out what it is before I begin to work with it. And maybe I need some expertise to help me." That's mm-hmm. going to be how we're going to work our way through discontinuous change.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well, we're kind of coming to a close here, George, and I want to thank you for sure. What would be some closing comments? So, you know, I know you talked about your book and what you learned from that, but anything else that you would say, you know, these are really critical things to remember on this topic?
Absolutely. I think the first critical thing is to start early.
Good point.
It needs to be built into how we plan and live our lives. That's one.
I totally agree. Yes.
Two, we'll be amazed at who knows things that we need to know. I get my grandchildren actually train me frequently and give me the information that I need. Wisdom is no longer automatically associated with advanced age because of life experience. There's a reduced shelf life of knowledge. There's a reduced efficacy of experience. And we're really going to have to pay attention to where we get the new information that we need and from whom we get it.
Yeah, that's excellent. Okay. Well, great. And I want to say thank you again. You've added a lot to the conversation. I'm really grateful. The more we can learn about, you know, how do I get there from here, the more we can make sure that the rest of life is the best of life.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate being your guest and your sage, Jen. You're terrific. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, George.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.